From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
The backyard harvest is probably coming in fast and furious, and the farm stand and farmers market tables are loaded too. So what to do with all those gorgeous zucchini, tomatoes, and how to savor every kernel of the fleeting peak moment of sweet corn? I called my friend Alexandra Stafford, author of Bread, Toast, Crumbs, and creator of the indispensable food website alexandracooks.com for ideas, and she had as many as I have zucchini at the moment. Uh-oh. So more in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Ali Stafford creates my favorite food website, Alexandra's Kitchen, or alexandracooks.com. And if you haven't followed her on Instagram, where her how-to videos and stories are like a short course in better cooking, well, don't delay any longer. And she's here to talk about summer's best flavors. Welcome back, Ali. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, Margaret?
Okay. Yeah. So I had to laugh when we started brainstorming in preparation for this segment about these ingredients, and neither one of us could stop naming recipes we wanted to make before the harvest dwindles.
I know. It's just so much good food at every turn.
Yeah. So where to begin? I had farm stand in my neighborhood, a farm stand sweet corn for dinner twice this week. And, you know, should we start with corn?
Sure. Yeah. It's the best sign when you see that first sign that says the local sweet corn has arrived.
I know.
Because there's just really nothing better.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I think you make like a fresh corn polenta, don't you even?
Oh my gosh. That's like my favorite. After probably corn on the cob, that's the first thing I make. And I don't make it a ton because truthfully, it's kind of a pain. You have to grate the ears of corn and you grate so much and it really feeds like one or two people.
Yeah.
But if you've never done it, you have to do it because it's so, so good. Top it with an egg, some Parmesan, and, you know, dinner is done.
Yeah.
After that, I'd say my favorite things to do are to strip the ears from the cob and to make soup. And I first learned about the trick with making a corn cob stock from Samin Nosrat's Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat.
Yes.
She has this amazingly simple, it's butter, onions, corn, salt, water, but I think it's 8 ears of corn maybe, strip the ears. She has a great trick for getting the ears off without stumbling and having the corn fly everywhere. You just line a shallow bowl with a tea towel and hold the cob upright, strip them down, and then as the cobs simmer in water, you start making the soup, and it's just really simple. And she pairs it with this herb salsa, which I think is essential because the soup is so sweet that you need something to cut it. And then after I made that, somebody else directed me to Deborah Madison's curried corn soup with coconut milk. Same idea. You make a stock with the stripped ears of corn, and there's garam masala, there's onions, there's cumin, lots of cilantro, coconut milk. Oh. They're so good. They freeze well, so you can, if you're overloaded with corn, you could make a ton of it, put it in quart containers, save it. You know, it feels so great pulling out a quart of soup in the winter.
Yeah, and so I should say that with all of these, we'll go into some of them in detail and others that we don't, we're going to, with the transcript of the show, besides the fact that I'm going to buy an extra copy of your book, Bread, Toast, Crumbs, and have a book giveaway, because I love it.
Oh, thank you.
And I love to encourage people to use it, and it's full of delicious vegetable things as well as bread and et cetera. So we'll have the links to all of these recipes in detail, you know, with photographs and so forth, so people can learn to make them. If anything sounds particularly delicious, we'll tell you how to do it in detail. So with transcript.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're making some soup. We had made the broth, which, I mean, even if you don't make that particular recipe, other cooks I've read, and I believe Ronna Welsh, the nimble cook that we both really admire in her new book, I think she talks about that, about don't throw away those corn cobs, right? I mean,
I'm sure she did. I made her collard green salad last night, actually, and she has a recipe for something to do with the stems of the collard greens.
Exactly.
I'm sure she has something to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So more corn thoughts?
Yeah. So Melissa Clark has also this amazing corn pasta recipe, and same thing. You strip the ears of corn, and it's almost like you make the fresh corn polenta, but you saute them and you puree. You keep some aside so you have some texture, but you cook some of them down, and then you puree it so you've got this creamy corn sauce, but there's no cream in it. There is butter and some Parmesan, but
it's not.
What's that?
Of course, butter and Parmesan.
Course, yes. Exactly. Yeah. And it's just this. It's really nice. It's just so summery. Lots of basil at the end, pepper. That's a really good one. And I haven't made this one yet, but I was looking on the Milk Street website, and they have a pasta recipe that's very summery. And it also calls for using the cobs to make a stock. But so you can use that as a sauce for pasta as well. And I think that one has tomatoes and basil and just other summer ingredients. I think it's a very versatile thing to have. And you could even probably just make the stock and freeze it.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you didn't have a risk. Yeah.
Have you ever made corn fritters? Because one of the local places near me sometimes makes them in season. And I always think, is that a lot of work? Because they're so delicious, I want them. But do you know what I mean? Do you ever do that?
Yes, they're so good. I have made Deborah Madison's recipe for those as well. And they're so good. And she uses cheddar, which sounds a little bit like maybe boring, but it's actually so perfect with the corn, I think, because the corn is so sweet. And there's scallions, and you just make a batter. It's you know, I think the trick with fritters is to just kind of like make a, you know, you make your batter, and then you've got to do a little tester one and see if it's seasoned right, see if it holds together properly. But once you get that one little guy ready, you can either store the batter in the fridge until you're ready to make them, or you can just, you know, fry away and reheat them, or, you know, keep them warm in an oven until you're ready to serve them.
It's funny. It's like, reminds me of if you're making pancakes, the first one's never quite the right one.
I know.
After
right,
that,
exactly.
The griddle's right. And you know what I mean? It's all, you get the right moment.
Right.
The right
exactly.
technique. Yeah. I mean, some restaurants near me, one in particular, you know, at this time of year, you can just count on the fact that even though he's a fabulous chef and can make anything, he just has a beautiful plate of sliced big, you know, heirloom beefsteak-sized tomatoes and fresh corn kernels and some basil and some beautiful oil. And you know what I mean? And so there's also that, right? I mean,
so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other salad ideas that involve corn?
I love if you have never made a raw corn salad, that is when I first had a raw corn salad, I thought this is I like eating the corn raw, you know, from the cob, but I never thought to kind of strip all the ears and make a whole salad with the raw kernels. And that's also a revelation for people. And I think the key with that, because the corn is so sweet, is to almost treat it more like a salsa. So you wouldn't season it with you would use more acid to olive oil, like maybe 2-to-1 or even maybe higher, 3-to-1, fresh lime, lemon, vinegar, whatever you have. And lots, you know, from there, as long as you, because the corn is so sweet, as long as you, I think, use enough acid, enough salt, really you can go anywhere with that, you know, onions, scallions, any herbs. I've seen some with some cheese, like feta or, you know, even Parmesan, just some sort of salty cheese is really good.
Right. So corn, I don't know, I'm tempted to just stay with corn for like the whole discussion because I'm so hungry now. But should we move on to tomatoes or where should we go?
Sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, tomatoes are, of course, the thing. And you know, I was out in the garden today and there were one of my favorite cherries is actually a hybrid, Sun Gold, you know. And I mean, I just can't imagine not having that. And, you know, you could just stand by the vine and just eat them all. They're just so fabulous. But there's lots of other things, including making sure that you save some for later. Like I just put whole tomatoes and even whole cherry tomatoes in freezer bags, and I use them instead of canned tomatoes later, you know, in the year, as I always mention at this time of year on the show. So I freeze whole tomatoes. You can roast them on a sheet pan and, you know, with some oil and some herbs and whatever, and then sort of put that slurry in freezer bags and make it into soup or sauce later. I mean, there's so many things we can do. Obviously, yeah. Make tomato sauce and freeze it. But about right now kind of recipes, what are some of the right now tomato favorites that you're excited about?
Right. I mean, it's hard to, you know, to not just eat like an open-faced sandwich all day long with, you know, like either like a bagel with cream cheese or, you know, flick of mayo and yeah. salt and chives, or just a simple salad, olive oil, vinegar. I feel like once you've done that, and once you've had your like pico de gallo or, I mean, something that's along the same lines, but maybe not as popular are these like no cook tomato sauces or raw tomato sauces.
Yes.
I feel like every summer I make at least one. Smitten Kitchen has a great one. If you Google naked tomato sauce, I think it comes right up. And that one's really good. And then I have a couple bookmarks that I'm hoping to try soon, but, often they call for either grating a tomato and then you discard the skin, or blanching them and removing the skin and then just chopping it. I saw one in Bon Appetit. It's for a no cook, puttanesca sauce. And it's interesting because they have you squeeze out the seeds, but you just chop them up and puree them in the food processor, which is nice because I don't always love removing the skin. And in fact, I know we've talked about this before, but with like Marcella Hazan's like favorite famous tomato sauce, I don't peel the tomatoes anymore. And I know you don't either,
no,
right?
No, I don't. Skin's on. I'm skin's on girl.
Yeah. So that one looks interesting to me because I've never, I haven't done it where I've kept the skins on. I think it looks really delicious. Lots of olives, capers. There's no anchovies in it, which is interesting. And
for
garlic,
Putinesca,
it just looks really fresh. Yeah. In summary. But what else? Okay. The other thing that I did make, and I feel, I almost feel silly talking about it because I hope it's just not old news for people, but, Jenny Rosenstock of Dinner, A Love Story wrote about Julia Moskin from the New York Times gazpacho recipe on Cup of Joe a few weeks ago. And, she sort of talked about it, how like every, you know, she sort of felt like the last person to know about this Julia Moskin gazpacho, recipe, but I had never heard about it either. And so as soon as I read it, it's like, oh gosh, I've got to try it. And it really is the easiest thing in the world. You just chop up tomatoes, no peeling, cucumber, peppers, one clove of garlic. What am I forgetting? Oh, a small onion into the food processor with olive oil. And if that's it. If you don't have a high-speed blender, I think they say to strain it, but you just stick the pitcher of soup in the fridge and it's so nice and so refreshing
and
to have on hand.
So it's a puree, not a chunky gazpacho, yeah?
It is. It's very smooth. And there's no, I think traditionally gazpacho has bread. There's no bread in it. So it's very silky, silky smooth. And I think Julia Moskin says this in her article, but what distinguishes it from just drinking like tomato juice essentially is the olive oil. There's a fair amount of olive oil. It's a half cup or so, but it makes a huge, huge amount of soup. And, I drizzled it also with like a little bit more olive oil, which is also traditional, but I had this chili oil and it was nice to just have a little bit of heat with the refreshing cold soup. And it's such a good, you know, the thing that's funny about this time of year is that there's so like, it's like endless inspiration everywhere you go, but almost everybody I talk to has like zero motivation to cook.
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
It's like the simpler the things are, the more likely they are to be made. And this one is, I mean, I was blown away by how quickly it came together and how much soup it makes, you know,
mm-hmm.
And if you have, you know, you have that on hand, it's dinner or lunch done for a couple of days.
Right. So any like entree-ish sort of things, we talked a little bit about some, you know, no cook, sauces, mm-hmm. no cooked tomato sauces, but any other sort of entree-ish ideas that you're with right now?
This time of year, I always make David Leibovitz's tomato and corn galette. It's so nice. I love his dough. The dough has a little bit of cornmeal in it, so it gives it a little bit of texture. And you saute leeks or saute onion, and then there's corn, tomatoes, a little bit of Gruyere, and it looks so pretty. It's so summery because you've got the corn and the tomatoes and top it with basil. And that's a really nice one. I also just made, Allison Roman from the New York Times has a poached fish recipe, and it's come together. I was visiting my sister and her husband, and we went to the store, came home, and really like 30 minutes later, it was done. But you saute shallots, saute tomatoes, no peeling or anything, add water, bring it to a simmer. So you just make this, actually, she has you make this kind of chili oil first with, that's really delicious, and you reserve that. And then you just poach the fish in this very fresh tomato sauce, which takes about 5 minutes. And then you spoon this homemade chili oil right on top. But you've got a, you have a lot of broth. And, you know, it's definitely something to have bread because, you know, this fresh tomato broth is so good. And you need something to soak it up.
Huh. Gotta have the bread. Gotta have the bread.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And hence the name of your cookbook.
Yes, right. No, exactly.
Yeah. So, you know, of course, we're talking about ripe tomatoes so far, yeah? And that's one of the things, just like you were talking about your tricks for getting corn off the cob without harming yourself with a sharp knife, you know, tricks for ripening tomatoes. And people a lot of times wonder, because maybe they have either animals or birds who in the garden who might decide to go after the tomatoes if they don't get them in time, if they let them ripen on the vine, or the weather may change, or, you know, sometimes big storm is coming, whatever, or it may get to be the end of the season and your weather is cooling down and you don't want to lose the ones. But, you know, it's interesting how the ripening, there's no precise prescriptive thing. Like, everybody has their own opinion, you know. Do you, like, bring it in and put it on the windowsill? Or do you which is, you know, like Alice Waters in, I believe it's Chez Panisse Vegetables, she says ripen indoors as a regular practice, you know, picking when the shift in color happens, you know, from orange to red begins. Like, in other words, don't wait too long. And she believes that it maximizes the sugar and acid content and so forth. But, and a lot of people feel that, like, not leaving it out, you know, again, where it may crack because maybe it's been dry out, and then suddenly you get 2 inches of rain in 5 minutes and these crazy storms or whatever. And then the tomato swells too much and cracks, you know, protecting that almost ripe tomato by bringing it inside. Some people wrap them in newspaper. Once they bring them inside, you know, grouping fruits that are of a similar level of ripeness, you know, in the same pieces of paper, so that you only have to peek inside to see if one is ready and so forth. And, you know, lots of different things. But the one thing I think for sure, and I can give a link into all the tactics for ripening tomatoes with the transcript, but one thing I think for sure is, don't put tomatoes in the refrigerator.
Yes. No.
Right.
No. Definitely.
Yeah, because it really ruins the flavor, I think. You know.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Have you gotten your? Are you getting your peak tomatoes now? Like, are you bringing in like a ton every single day?
Yeah, and the people, the farmers around me are also. It's really accelerating, and into September they will. So it'll be like from around now in August to into September. And again, we're in the Northeast, so, you know, we can have frost by early October. So, but it's that later part of the tomato season that starts to be the real buildup of volume for me, generally speaking.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
What varieties are you growing? Are you growing any?
We always grow Cherokee Purple. That's my absolute favorite. But then after listening to your podcast with NC Tomato Man.
Oh, well, North Carolina Tomato Man, right. Craig LaHoulier, yeah.
Yeah, right. So my husband bought Dester seeds and started. So we have both of them. We have Cherokee Purple and Desters going. And the Desters are ripening a little bit faster than the Cherokee Purples. We've had one Cherokee Purple tomato that was absolutely amazing, and we took a page out of NC Tomato Man's book, and we brought the tomato with us to a bagel place so that we could have like really good bagels and cream cheese with our own tomatoes.
and we brought
the salt along too, and it was it's such, when that first ripe tomato, I mean, it's the same thing with that first local good piece of corn.
Yeah.
You know, there's just nothing like it.
So just so we don't run out of time, and, you know, I know we have lots more tomato recipes to offer, but I want to, you know, the much maligned zucchini.
I know.
You know, What do you think? I think it's overcooked sometimes. I think that's part of the problem sometimes, you know.
Totally.
Yeah.
I think this time of year, too, people have, they've done their, like, the raw salad with olive oil and lemon and Parmesan. They've done, I mean, I have a spaghetti recipe I love that you have to julienne them thinly, either, like, on a mandolin or on a, in, you know, a spiralizer, but
yes.
you don't cook it. You just toss it with the spaghetti, and the heat of the spaghetti just, you know, softens the zucchini enough, and that's really nice.
Exactly.
But I did just see, and I actually made it, and it was so good. Heidi Swanson from 101 Cookbooks, you know, she said, you know, this time of year, you know, the zucchini are really arriving. So she, you know, is always looking for recipes, and as many people are, that call for, you know, 4 or 5 or 6 zucchini. And this one was so fast and so good. And you essentially just, you saute some garlic and you throw chopped in zucchini into the pan with water. And I actually ended up shredding them all in my food processor. So it was really fast. I used like 6 zucchini, throw them in the pan with water, and you cover it and simmer it for about 10 minutes, cook pasta on the side. And then, add a ton of Parmesan cheese, a ton of basil, a ton of toasted almonds, and you just toss it all together, and it's so good. And it's essentially the zucchini, like, it melts. The zucchini becomes a sauce,
right?
The way tomatoes become a sauce,
right?
It's not a. I mean, the almonds add texture. It's not a dish with like texture. It's like the zucchini becomes, it's mush. But the more I meet people, I meet so many people who are actually fans of mush. So it's so tasty. And I feel like that's one, like, when you are overloaded with zucchini, it's a great one, because you can cook a lot of zucchini.
Right. So in the last few minutes, I mean, we'll give links to recipes for zucchini fritters, speaking of fritters before, and zucchini bread, which is so delicious, and pickles, which we both have recipes for that. But what about, you know, like, using all of these things, well, maybe not the corn, ratatouille. We haven't mentioned have we?
Yes.
So, because I used to do that and freeze it, you know, like use up a lot of the vegetables at this time of year and then freeze it and have this sort of like casserole-y thing for later on. So ratatouille as well?
Oh, definitely. And I've already, the past 2 or 3 weeks, farm shares, they arrived, my CSA, and that's from Roxbury Farm, and probably everybody in this area looks similar, but it looks like tailor-made to make ratatouille. Eggplant, zucchini, onions, peppers, garlic. It's everything you need. And I have a recipe from Jenna Hamshaw. It's from the Food 52 vegan cookbook. And it's the one I always use, but you toss all the vegetables with olive oil and vinegar, and you roast them for a really long time. I mean, it depends on how many vegetables you're using, but I heap them into my largest roasting pan, toss it with basically 2 to 1. I think most recently did a half cup of olive oil, a quarter cup of balsamic vinegar. And I think I roasted it for 2 hours until it just gets really stewy and jammy.
Wow.
And then packed it into quart containers. And I mean, it's just, it freezes so well. You could toss it with pasta, put it on bread, put in lasagna, and there's so many things you could do with it.
I make lasagnas also and freeze them, by the way, at this time of year, and I use my tomatoes. You know, I make a quick sauce for in between the layers, but I also use, like, you could use the mandolin, or you could just make slabs, you know, thin slabs of, you know, cut the zucchini lengthwise, you know, and put that as one of your layers and so forth. So that's another place where I hide the zucchini.
Definitely. No, actually, I have like a zucchini Parmesan recipe that was, I think it's a Martha Rose Schulman, like it's an adaptation of hers, but she roasts all the zucchini and then layers it with Parmesan, and it's so good. And that's a great way also. I mean, the roasting is a step, but still you can use a lot of zucchini.
Well, Allie, we've used up our time.
Okay.
Of course, but we will. The idea of this is to give people like a cornucopia of recipe links and ideas and pictures. So we're going to do that in the transcript, and you'll have them on your site. I'll have them on my site. I'll give everyone the links with the transcript on awaytogarden.com. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks, Margaret.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and cooking from the garden meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.